Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Your drive home just got better. The Big Six with Jason Martin. Weeknights at 6 on 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Pleased to be joined by John Feinstein, who joins us normally on Mondays. Nice enough to join us today. And he has the new book that he was nice enough to send us, Quarterback, Inside the Most Important Position in the National Football League. Paul, you've been going through this. I read a couple of chapters, including the one on, there's multiple, on Andrew Luck. John, I've enjoyed it so far. And the first question I have for you. On the cover, it says, inside the most important position in the National Football League. Did you consider, say, the most important position in sports?
Yep, sure did, Jonathan. And it was a conversation I had with my editor, and I think he felt like, let's make the subtitle something that absolutely nobody will debate. There might be some people out there who'd say a hockey goalie. There might be some out there who would say a dominant starting pitcher. I would make the case that the dominant starting pitcher starts once every 5 days. The goalie is critical in hockey. We know that. But he touches the puck anywhere from 25 to 40 times most nights. Whereas the quarterback touches the ball on every single snap, offensive snap, during a game. So, yes, absolutely. And I do believe that to be the case.
Well, and John, you did an excellent job of picking out some very interesting subjects in this book. I love the opening with Joe Flacco, and of course Andrew Luck is brilliant also. Is there anything, and I feel like you're someone who's not often surprised when you go into a story or a subject that you're going to cover. Is there anything that surprised you pleasantly when researching this or talking to some of these quarterbacks?
Well, you know, I wasn't surprised, Chad, by how open they were with me, how honest they were. I was delighted with that, and really delighted with the fact that they were willing to give me as much time as they did. You can tell reading the book that they were very generous that way. I would say if there was a surprise to me, it was gaining sort of more understanding. I already had some of just how much pressure there is on these guys constantly. And there's physical pressure on every snap of the football. I know people like to say, well, the new rules, they ought to put dresses on the quarterbacks. They get pounded, whether the hit's legal or not. You know, when a quarterback gets hit and there's a flag, that doesn't make the hit any easier to take. And they get hit constantly. They have to make split second decisions on every single play before the snap and after the snap. You guys know that when you see a quarterback pointing, as he comes to the huddle, what he's saying is our protection's wrong. We expected this guy to be in that gap and he's in this gap. And if you don't make an adjustment, I'm going to get killed. And that's before the snap. And then he has about a second and a half to 2.5 seconds, if he's lucky, to make all the decisions he has to make on every play. But beyond that, it's the fact that the quarterback's the highest paid guy. We all know that. And they make a lot of money, the good ones. Along with that comes responsibility, not just in the locker room. The quarterback's always the offensive captain. But also as the out front guy, as the face of the franchise, whether the franchise is succeeding or failing. You guys know after every NFL game, Paul, you see this every week, there are two guys who must speak to the media. One is the coach, the other is the quarterback. Everybody else is pretty much optional, depending on how the game went. You know, you cite the Flacco example, Chad, and I think that's a very good one. That's why I opened the book with it, where they lost a game to the Steelers. They played poorly. They scored 9 points. Flacco's asked to assess his performance, and he says, I sucked. We scored 9 points. I'm the quarterback. I'm responsible for the offense. We had 3 turnovers. There were 2 interceptions. He didn't mention that both interceptions were balls that went right off the receiver's hands, where he'd thrown the ball perfectly. But he's not going to do that. He's not going to throw teammates under the bus, A, because it certainly doesn't help him at all, and B, because that's not who he is, and that's not who most of these guys are. So there's a lot more that goes into it. And just to sum it up, I think Doug Williams at the end of the book had the great best line when he said, I get asked all the time if I can describe what it's like to play quarterback in the NFL, and the answer is I can't. You have to experience it. And I tried through these guys to come as close to experiencing it as I could, but I've never taken a hit, so I can't possibly claim that I did.
John, there was so much speculation, and still is a lot of speculation, about what Peyton Manning is going to do post-playing career. Is he going to be a GM one day? Is he going to get into television? What's the next move for him?
We just That's a great question, Chad.
Hold on. I'm going to ask a different question, actually.
Sure.
We just spent the last segment playing snippets of the Andrew Luck Book Club podcast. This is a guy, the next Colts quarterback, that to me is even more interesting what he's going to do post-playing career, because it may have nothing at all to do with football. What do you think is next for Andrew Luck?
Did he mention in that podcast that what he thinks he'd really like to do is be a high school history teacher? Because that's what he told me. I mean, he's not locked into anything, obviously. He hopes to play for another 8 to 10 years. He just turned 29. He feels like he's healthy again. But he told me that his thought is to go overseas. He's lived overseas. And perhaps teach high school history. And he is that kind of, he's unique as a professional athlete. I don't think I've ever met anyone quite like him. Obviously graduated from Stanford in 3.5 years. But I do, let me put it to you this way. When he retires, I don't expect you or anybody else to ask me the question, will he be in television or will he be a general manager? I don't think he'll be either.
I was struck in your kind of conclusion about Alex Smith's season, which came at the hands of the Titan,
right,
with a nugget about the officiating in that game. And we know Titans often victimized people thinking Nashville by the officiating. They're actually beneficiaries in that game. A Mariota fumble undone by forward progress, debatable. Cyprian knocked out Kelsey. Cyprian knocked out Kelsey. Definitely a play that should have been flagged. And Derrick Henry was down when he fumbled, and there was no whistle. And you came to lend something there that the official of that game maybe got the assignment as a going away present.
Yeah, Jeff Triplett. And I've seen this happen in other sports. I remember a few years ago, Jim Bain had been a longtime official and was clearly over the hill and was getting ready to retire, and he got assigned a regional final in the tournament. I asked Hank Nichols, who did the assigning, why he got that game, and Hank was very honest. He said, I gave it to him as a going-away present. I don't think you can do that. There's too much at stake for the players and the coaches to give an official a going-away present, especially when there's a reason why he's retiring usually. And Jeff Triplett was never a great NFL official. He hadn't worked a playoff game for years. He's most famous for throwing the beanbag in Orlando Brown's eye and costing Orlando Brown, the late Orlando Brown, 3 years of his career. And the NFL, he had told people, apparently, that he was going to retire. He announced his retirement in March, and they gave him that game. And I'll tell you what, Paul, I respect your knowledge of football.
I don't remember the play.
Well, he was going backwards. He was sacked. It was a pure sack. He was going backwards. He got sacked and he fumbled. And Triplett said the play was stopped by forward progress. And you're right about the Derrick Henry thing. He was down. And then there was what was the other one you mentioned? I'm blocking out.
Derrick Henry was clearly down, and they had him return
for a touchdown.
No question,
he was down. But earlier there was another very...
Cyprian knocked out Kelsey.
Yeah, Cyprian. I mean, that was a head-to-head. Now, helmet-to-helmet. Now, this year, under the new rule, it absolutely would have been called. But I don't even blame the officials that much for that one. I blame the fact that there were so many loopholes in the helmet-to-helmet hit rule that existed. I mean, Travis Kelsey was knocked out of the game. That was obviously critical in the second half when the Chiefs didn't score at all. But yeah, you're right. I don't know what Jeff Triplett was doing on that field that night. And Joe Flacco, who watched the game and who had didn't care if the Titans won or the Chiefs won, his team had been eliminated the week before, said that he thought it was just brutal that they put Jeff Triplett on that game, that if he had been involved in a playoff game and that happened, he'd have been furious.
John Feinstein with us.
Paul, let me just say a couple things real quick, Jonathan, before we get into Boo Corrigan.
Yep.
One, it's snowing here, Paul.
Okay.
We got like 3 inches on the ground. So
I didn't move down here for 32
John,
degrees.
Keep going. You have the floor. Yes.
Number one. Number two, I just want to be clear. We were talking about Jeff Triplett in that playoff game. The Titans deserve to win the game. I don't want anybody to think I'm not saying that. They were down 21-3 at halftime. They rallied. Marcus Mariota made a remarkable play on that deflected pass where he just grabbed the ball and dove into the end zone. But the officiating was terrible. And you're right, they missed the Derrick Henry call. Fortunately, that was correctable in New York. The forward progress play in the first half that they missed was not correctable in New York, nor was the helmet-to-helmet hit. So it was bad officiating. The Titans deserved to win the game ultimately. But as Paul mentioned when he brought it up, the fact that Jeff Triplett was working that game was really not a good thing by the NFL.
I think Vanderbilt may be about to butcher this athletic director search. Not going to automatically prejudge, but it sounds like they could wind up with a commissioner of the NBA's much ballyhooed G League as their new athletic director, which sounds bizarre to me and has Chad laughing over here.
I just like the buildup of the G League, much ballyhooed G League. That's what I was laughing at.
The Boo Corrigan seemed to fit the mold in many ways and was right in the heart of it, at least for a while. Sounds like he's not in the heart of it anymore. What would he have brought here, and do you think that it's probably over?
Well, it is over. And I'm not 100% sure exactly what the sequence of events was. When you and I talked last week, I mentioned to you that they were perhaps looking at a quote out of the box, hire. And it sounds like from what you're saying that maybe the direction they're going in. Boo would have been a great hire for Vanderbilt. He's done an outstanding job at Army. You know how bad their football program was when he got there. He hired the right coach in Jeff Munkin. The basketball program's on solid ground under Jimmy Allen. He's done a really great job as a fundraiser, which is so important now for an AD. And his background is academic-minded schools. His dad was the AD at Virginia and Notre Dame. Boo graduated from Notre Dame, has worked at Navy, Duke, Army, and Notre Dame, all academic schools. So to me, you know, selfishly, I'm glad he's going to still be at Army because I love working with him. I do some stuff on their radio network, with both football and basketball. But Vanderbilt would have really benefited had they hired Boo.
It's a reminder also, tomorrow at 10:15, David Williams, outgoing Vanderbilt athletic director, will join us in studio on the show. So we'll talk about what's next at Vanderbilt. John, what's next at Duke is pretty exciting when you watch that basketball team play.
Oh, I thought you were talking about their game at Clemson Saturday.
No, not
that
won't
that be
one.
Exciting.
Yeah, it's basketball season in Durham already. Yeah, that's for sure.
It's basketball season in September. As great a job as David Cutcliffe has done, and he has with that football program, I never thought I'd see the day when they would be a respectable ACC team year in and year out. But the most important sport, fall sport at Duke, is basketball recruiting, Chad. So I know where you're going.
Yeah, they had the top three picks in the NBA draft on their team. I don't know that we're fully appreciating the level of talent to have three freshmen that right now are easily projected to be the top three overall picks in next year's NBA draft. And they are delivering on that expectation in the early going.
Well, they're really good. There's no question. And what they did to Kentucky was obviously shocking, I think, to most of us, me included. And they've got a pretty good coach. I think he knows what he's doing. I do think people are premature wanting to hand them the national championship based on their game against Kentucky. I happened to be at their game against Army on Sunday. I was there basically hanging out with Army for a book that I'm working on right now on kids and players and teams and coaches that aren't in the spotlight all the time. And Army did, it was a 6-point game with 11 minutes to go, guys. And what Army exposed there was, as talented as these guys are, and they are, they're still freshmen. and they tend to go one-on-one at times. I think there's a little bit of a show-off factor, even though Mike Krzyzewski got very uptight when somebody asked him after the game if that was true. You know, they're all playing, Chad, as you said, to be top picks in the NBA draft. They're in college only because they have to be for a year. And so while I think they're really good and they're going to have some nights like the Kentucky night that are jaw-dropping, I think when they start to play experienced teams like Virginia, like North Carolina, if they were to play a Tennessee in the NCAA tournament, all teams with lots of experience, it may not be as easy as they've made it look so far.
John Feinstein with the Washington Post, Golf Digest, CBS Sports Radio, Golf Channel, and he is the number one best-selling author for the New York Times on their list. The new book is Quarterback by John Feinstein, Inside the Most Important Position in the National Football League. John, we look forward to finishing this book. Thank you for the time today, and we'll catch up next week.
I'll look forward to it, guys, and I'll await your critique on the book. I hope you'll all enjoy it.
Enjoy your next dozen interviews today.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate that. Take it easy.